It's the Mayo News Football Podcast. I'm Rob Murphy. Mayo are back in an All-Ireland final and our preview starts here. A series of podcasts to keep you going between now and the big day. We're not talking about Christmas Day. John Gunnigan, how are you?
We may as well be talking about Christmas Day, Rob, because there's less than a week between All-Ireland final day and Christmas Day this year. I mean, how bats can you get? I said, on the blog, I called it Turkey and Sam, and I think that's kind of what it is, isn't it?
No one ever tried Sam with turkey before, but we're going to try it this Christmas. Wow, we know the feeling, we know what these All-Ireland finals are all about, but at the same time, it never gets old, that sense of anticipation, that sense of hope. Well, of course, each time there's a different kind of attitude going into it. This time, the most realistic of all. Having said that, you can still, I find it easy enough to separate that reality from the reality of just being proud that my county team are back there.
Yeah, and you see, that's the thing that I guess that people who have never experienced it never quite get about the All-Ireland final. Well, there's two things really. One is if you're not in them, you can't win them. But even for all the losses, I'd never give back any of those, because the magical period in the lead up to the final is always as good. I mean, I know, look, we with each successive defeat, you know, it does knock a little bit more of the life out of us to some degree. And I do remember in 17 thinking, ugh, feel which way they go, you know. But at the same time, we put in the most magnificent performance in that final. And the crack we had in the lead up to that. Rob, we went to London with
the podcast. Oh, that was brilliant. Yeah, for the preview show. Oh, man.
Think about that. Like, you know, I mean, what a period we had then, you know. So each one of them have been magical in their own different way. This one is different. It's hugely constrained, obviously, by COVID. But at the same time, you know, it is unique in its own sense. And look, of course, we're going to enjoy it.
Coming up on today's podcast, Sean Rice is back. Great to have him back as well. Mike Finnerty hopped in the car today to get out and say hello and catch up like he did a few weeks ago. It'll be very interesting to see how Sean has observed the last few weeks, the build-up to the Connacht final, the victory and ending that run of Connacht titles, and then the semi-final victory. As we sit here just a couple of days on, I've listened to a good few podcasts, I've read the papers. It's just kind of been a balanced review, John. And we'll talk a bit more about this after we hear from Sean. But, you know, people are hugely impressed with how Mayo attacked. Obviously, a huge focus on Killian O'Connor. And that's the second part of our podcast. Mm-hmm. We're going to play out a little clip from his chat with Billy Joe Padden earlier this season, much earlier, back in May. And it was an incredible chat. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But the reaction in general seems to be Mayo are an attacking force with lots of energy, lots of spark. Killian O'Connor is a player that we keep underestimating. This, I'm speaking for the nation. We don't underestimate him. And here we are now, kind of still in a situation where people are going, yeah, but they won't beat Dublin.
Yeah, well, the yeah, but concerns everything that came after halftime, I guess, Rob. And in one sense, I think James Horan will be delighted, because it's always great to keep the opposition guessing, I suppose. And it's a bit like extending the fog that surrounded the team in Croke Park on Sunday, because we just don't know in terms of, you know, was that them taking the foot off the gas or what it was. Because the first half, you know, and if we cut it there, the first half is the most devastating half of football I've certainly ever seen from Mayo, and from a lot of other teams as well. And Ed McGrail had that stat in the paper this week that it bettered by 1 point that record-breaking score that we clocked up in Tuam in for the amount we scored in a single half, when Dermot O'Connor punched the ball into the net just before half time, that beat it by a point. So yeah, it was incredible. But at the same time, it's hard to know what to say about the second half. So classic game with two halves. I think all we can say is if Dublin are up for a shootout, so are we.
Should be interesting. More from us in a wee while, but let's get straight to Sean Rice. And he is one of the many great contributors to this week's superb Mayo News Sports section. Here's Mike Finnerty.
So everyone, you're welcome along to Green Hills in Island 80. I'm sitting here alongside Sean Rice, socially distant, of course. Sean, I see, is hard at work on his All-Ireland final preview column for the Mayo News. And I suppose that's a good place to start, Sean. You get to write an All-Ireland final preview column, because the last time we spoke, Mayo were getting ready to play Roscommon. I think you were probably slightly more bullish than I was. And here we are, having beaten Roscommon, Galway and Tipperary. And we're getting ready for an All-Ireland final between Mayo and Dublin Christmas week. Did you ever think you'd see the day?
Well, I'm long in the tooth now, Mike. I'll tell you, I'm really long in the tooth. Watching football, reporting football, but never did I think that a week before Christmas we'd be in the All-Ireland final. It's quite unbelievable. It's hard. It's really hard to, on a wintry day, with the, looking out the window here and the rain coming down and a cold north wind blowing, you say to yourself, are we daft? But here we are, in an All-Ireland final, having surprised the whole country.
You have to go back to 1989 for John O'Mahony's great line, keep the faith. And I have to give credit where it's due, Sean, you kept the faith. You had an inkling at the back of your mind, I know, at the start of the championship, that this Mayo team could really do something, that they had great potential. And here we are, as I say, back in an All-Ireland final.
Well, it is. I have to say, Mike, that when the matches started on the first week, October, whenever it was that we played Galway in the opening round, trying to hold on to our position in the league, I did not ever realise that Mayo would have reached an All-Ireland final. We didn't know what Mayo were like. We had gone all year without seeing them. We had seen them, the last match was in March, way back in the end of February. And we didn't know what was coming. We had seen great club football throughout the year, but we had not an idea of what Mayo would be like. We certainly didn't think that we'd be in the shake-up at all. We thought, going into Galway for the first round in the league, we thought here was an eye-opener. What we got was a brilliant performance that stunned us all. It was evident that players had been doing something. We didn't realise that there'd be such players as Mullins and McLaughlin and Conroy in a game, starring in a game, doing what the seniors hadn't done for years. It was quite unbelievable. And we said, well, was it a fluke or not? So we said, well, okay, we're one up. we have to meet Tyrone from the next round to stay up. We didn't stay up. We lost by a point. But that same kind of structure was in the team. The same kind of ability was in the team. They were playing great football. And they were just beaten by a point. It could have gone anyway. And we were quite delighted. It was no fluke against Galway. We were convinced then that there was something here in this Mayo team. But the championship then had to come up and we had to go to Roscommon. And that was another game that certainly nobody thought Mayo would win it, because it was above Knight Park. We were playing against the Connacht champions, a new team, virtually a new team. And I was fairly convinced, having watched them in the first two games, that this was a better team than a lot of people realised. And sure, we took the Connacht champions to the cleaners. Mm. And that was something that really impressed an awful lot of people. And it started, the naysayers and the doubters started to begin to think, oh God, we have something here at last. So that left us to the Galway, to meeting Galway in the Connacht final, another one. We had to travel again to that one, up to Pearse Stadium, which can be a graveyard for teams, many, many a team. And then we won that one by a point? We won it by. But we should have won it by more, even though we could have lost it as easily, because they didn't play quite as well. But then Galway were up for it. They were certainly looking for revenge, and they came in with a storm, and yet Mayo contained them and won in the end, and deservedly won in the end. And that left us with the match against Tipperary last week. Well, We thought Tipperary, on a wave of emotion and a wave of nostalgia, we thought that, and having done what they did against Cork, we thought, well, this was going to be a stickler, because we only beat them by 4 points 4 years ago. And we said, they're better now because they're more experienced now. We thought Mayo less experienced, a lot of the young lads less experienced. We thought this was going to be difficult. Well, it was a topsy-turvy match. They were superb. After the first 5 minutes, I think I nearly fainted on the table in the first 5 minutes watching the holes that were being bored in the Mayo defence. I said, my God, this is going to be a disaster. And then out of that came a brilliant next 30 minutes or so. And they were absolutely superb. The way they moved, the way they built moves, the way they gelled, the way their full forward line synchronised. It was just an eye-opener again. And then we have an... it was one thing was great to see. It's to see Killian O'Connor scoring, outscoring anybody ever that kicked a ball in any team for any county over the decades. It was great to see him. He was tremendous. He was on the ball. He was alert. All the other players were too, I have to say. They were all alert in that first half. Mm. And they were all playing. And that's why Killian played so well, because they were working together in unison. But I was just disappointed in the second half, Mike. Mm. Very disappointed. There were too many holes in the defence. The kickouts, for a start, the kickouts were poor. Again, we've been caught again before by those poor kickouts, and we were caught the last day badly. And once Tipperary got their tails up, they started winning ball at midfield. We didn't have the same kind of midfield strategy that we had in the first half. Everything went loose, and you could see Tipperary just coming. They were on a wave coming, and I said, this was desperate. And the goals that came did come, and there should have been more goals. Tipperary had chances to score more goals than that. And you just wonder about the whole thing, Mike. You know, if you compare that performance, that defensive performance with Cavan the night before against Dublin, Cavan were far superior. Dublin only got one goal, got through for one goal, got one chance and got their goal. If Dublin had the Mayo defence that played in the second half the last day, they'd destroy us, absolutely destroy us. And there's no point in talking about how good we might be up front. There's no point in talking, because you can build, if you could build it's 5 or 6 goals, there were enough chances for the opposition to put in 7 or 8 goals the last day.
And now, Sean, we move on to the final, and it's a one-off game. Christmas week, as we said, the stadium is going to be empty. The entire country is going to expect Dublin to do 6 in a row. There's no pressure on Mayo. There's no pressure on the younger players in particular, because there won't be a crowd in the stadium. And to a large degree, it's maybe not quite a free shot, but we know that there is more expected of Dublin. Certainly that's the way I see it, than there is of Mayo. So taking all of that into account, where does your heart and your head sit right now when you think about the prospect of Mayo and Dublin on Saturday week?
Well, the first thing I have to say, Mike, is that after what happened in the second half against Tipperary, I'm quite sure that James Horden will have done something to stop to plug the holes in the defence. I'm quite sure he'll have done that. And I have to measure the Mayo's campaign so far with that of Dublin. Mm. Mayo have had a far better campaign, a far stronger, far harder campaign than Dublin had. Dublin had no opposition this year. Nothing at all, that's what you could say. We thought maybe Kerry would come up. They didn't come up. We thought, everyone thought Donegal would be the team that would give them a game. Donegal aren't there. So it's down to Mayo. And, you know, for over the years, Mayo are the only team that have given Dublin any kind of a game. They're the only team beaten by what? Point in a replay, beaten by a point in another game, beaten fairly well the last time out, 10 by 10 points the last time we were out, that's a year ago or so, beaten by 10 points. But that was after Mayo had a strenuous qualifying journey. They had being beaten by Roscommon in the first round, they had to go throughout the whole qualifiers. And then by the time they reached Croke Park for the semi-final against a Dublin team that had met nothing, no opposition, they collapsed in the second half, and that was down to complete fatigue. So I'm not a bit downhearted about Mayo's about the chances of Mayo's Mayo against Dublin. I think that if the forward line operates as it has been operating throughout the season, I think Dublin will have to be wary of them. For instance, the first man that's going to be marked against Dublin the next day is Killian O'Connor. To do that, they'll have to put two men on him. In the same line out, the other man they'll have to mark is Caden O'Shea. They'll have to put two or three men on him to stop him. And then you have young Tommy Conroy, who's capable as any of the other two. So therefore, that Dublin defence can be, if they keep cool, it can be opened. And Mayo can, if the rest of the team, the Dearmans, Kevin McLaughlin, and those fellas, I think they can find scores.
What's your biggest worry, Sean, when you look at the Dublin team and you look at maybe weaknesses or vulnerabilities on the Mayo side? Like, what's the worst case scenario that you see in your mind's eye?
Dublin, what I see about Dublin is how strong they are in breaking through the opposition, the immediate opponents. Mm-hmm. They have the ball and they're strong on it, and they can suddenly make a lightning run from the position, and they can open up a gap that way. If Mayo allow the likes of Callaghan, mm-hmm. O'Callaghan, and the other forwards, the other couple of Dublin forwards that are not Scully, but Kieran Kenny particularly, if they allow him off the limb, if they allow those to go loose, then Mayo are in trouble. But I think Horan will have ideas for marking them. I think they will, but Callaghan is very, very dangerous. He's very strong. He's very strong when he gets the ball, and he's very strong on the breakthrough. Mm-hmm. And if he breaks through a couple of defenders, then he's going to go right through and score a goal. And he has done a lot of damage to Mayo in the past.
Tell us, give our listeners an insight, Sean, into what All-Ireland final evening, I was going to say day, but evening, is going to be like here in the Rice household, given it'll be the 19th of December. Your days of travelling with the Burns babes, I think it took you a day or two to get up and down to Dublin back in the good old days. That won't be happening, obviously. You won't be on media duty either in level 7 of the Hogan stand. And lucky you, we thought we were going to be taken out of there on stretchers last weekend with the hypothermia. So what's your match day routine, Sean, or what will it be for the All-Ireland? Will you have a hot whiskey? Will you have a hot water bottle? Will you be pacing the floor? Can you sit back and enjoy it? Tell us, just give us a little insight into your household here of a big match.
Well, the fact that it's on Saturday and in the evening means that it's a different scenario. But actually, you know, there are only the two of us in our house for this match anyway. We have a dog normally here, but that dog will be gone. He'll be with my daughter, who owns the dog anyway.
Is that for the dog's safety, Sean?
Yeah, that's for the dog's safety, is right. Butterflies, Mike. That's the thing that'll be with me all the time. And I'll try to keep doing something when my hands are walking out for a walk or something like that, and keep my mind off it as much as I can. Mm. And I come in then and listen, and I won't be able to take a note. It'll be a scrawl, a proper scrawl in the paper. Everything will be a scrawl. So you're just hoping. And when you're built up for this, and when you think that maybe Mayo don't have a chance, then you're kind of more relaxed, I think, you know, because that's what a lot of people are thinking. Mm. But when Mayo start coming back, and if they do get within a couple of points of them, and the one way I think Mayo can beat them is if they can hold them to a couple of points and do what Seamus Darby did against Offaly way back in 82.
Strike late,
mm-hmm. so that they don't have a chance to get back. Yeah. I think if they can do that, that's the one way I'd be sure that they'd win.
That's the plan. And Sean, I can only imagine how many people listening right now would only love to be booking flights, to be booking hotels, to be feeling that match ticket in their hand as they hand over the €90 or whatever it is, and just to know they've got that golden ticket to the chocolate factory. Like, would you love to be going to Croke Park on Saturday? Would you love to be there in the thick of it one more time?
I would. I certainly would, yeah. No doubt about it. It's the one thing I would want, always wanted to see in my years, I have too many years left to be watching, is to see a Mia Men walk up the stand of Croke Park and lift the Sam Maguire Cup, you know. That was the one thing we always had waited for. But look, it's where we are. if by any chance they do win the Sam Maguire Cup, it won't be in Castlebar anyway because they won't let it down. So it is.
We'll have to go and get it, Sean.
We'll have to go to the Ravage.
And just to finish, because I think it's a lovely image, and it's obviously an image that anyone born or has connections to Mayo would have dreamt about thousands of times. You know, can you close your eyes and when you think about it, when you think about this final, can you picture Aidan O'Shea up there lifting that trophy, making that speech? I mean, do you believe in your heart of hearts that this time it's possible?
I do. I do, yeah. Because Mayo have a record against Dublin. And they have been unlucky on a few occasions. Maybe the luck will change for a change. Maybe Dublin won't be quite as good as they are. They certainly haven't met the type of opposition that they're going to meet in the final on this occasion. They certainly haven't done that. And you never know. If Mayo hit the form, make sure that they close off the gaps. If they do that, I'm still hopeful. Yeah.
Well, Sean, always a pleasure to talk to you and to talk football to you. And if there's one thing you taught me over the years, it's keep the faith.
Thanks, Mike. Well, I suppose sometimes you think we're daft, but there is football in Mayo. There's no doubt about that. And it's just if they got the rub of the green, which they need, and which every game's in, which everybody needs and every team needs it, if they got a bit of that on Saturday week, you never know. You never know.
GRG Sports are proud sponsors of this podcast. Kit out your team today. Bespoke team sportswear designed by players for players. Be game, be ready, be geared. Check out GRG's website at grgsports.com.
Absolutely brilliant from Sean Rice. Another paper to come before the All-Ireland final, but just one more paper. Used to be we'd have three weeks at least before an All-Ireland final, not now. So the lads are working away on that in the background, but you need to work away making sure you get your copy, your digital copy, if you're listening somewhere else in the world, or if you're local to the County of Mayo, or even some of the outlets all around the country to carry it. Get in and get a copy. You're going to enjoy it. Fog of War, beautiful front cover and some superb writing inside. That's for then. This is for now. We've got a few requests of our podcast listeners now, John. One is just to follow us on at Mayo Podcast, because you might think to yourself, God, these guys, they give us this podcast for free all the time. It's amazing. Aren't they great? And you might be thinking once in a while, what can we do for them? And all we ask is that you follow us, because the more followers we have, the more idea we have where you are and we can have a chat with you. You know, the more we can reach you, which is so important to us. So that's a simple thing. Follow us on Twitter and we'll be very appreciative of your support. In the meantime, John, we're actually asking them ahead of the next podcast to get involved.
We are indeed, yeah. And this is a new venture for us, which is a question and answer episode. And I always get the feeling that, you know, when you're listening to any kind of podcast, it's a passive experience to a large degree, in that you're taking the message down, if you like. Whereas this is an opportunity for people to push in the other direction, to upload some stuff as well, and to ask questions of our panel. And I'm sure our listeners will have loads of very interesting questions in the lead into this All-Ireland.
It's funny that you speak about the passive experience, because that's one of the things that separates a podcast from radio. It does make you feel like you're part of the conversation, but it's only when you stop and think about it that it's all one way. So that's why we're providing that little bit of an element to it. And I think it's something that you've done from day one on the blog, and that's the whole concept of the blog. Yes, it's your writings and it's your narrative initially, but what's amazing about what the Mayo GA blog is, it's a safe space to come on, have conversations with lots of Mayo fans. So there's a little bit of that in the blog, and we want to bring some of that to the podcast. We want to hear your voices from around the world, and we want to answer your questions.
And we've dipped our toe ever so slightly in that water ourselves as well, Rob, with the podcast. You know, when we were that famous night in London, when so many people were there, and we used so many voices from that. But the the best thing from that night, I think, were the chats, you know, and I've, as you said, I mean, I found that the blog as well, not only conversing with people online, but then when you meet them offline as well. So I think, yeah, I think the more you can expand that ecosystem, the better.
I think as we're going to talk about Cillian O'Connor in a minute or two, but I think just to kind of bookend, let's take this small 5-minute segment here, John, for us to just take stock one more time before we get stuck into the meat and drink, because I think everyone is just like, bring on this final as quickly as possible. It's not, you know, we talked about salivating in a moment and enjoying being Connacht champions, and it was lovely. But right now, I just think people are anxious to, let's get going. Let's see the football. But I just think for one second, it's always worth stopping. You said to me off air that you can't believe it's only been 3 years or, you know, since the last final. It hasn't been that long. And like, you think, where were we 3 years after, you know, 1996, we were losing to Cork in the semi-final, 3 years after 2006, I think we were losing to Meath in a quarter-final. Do you know, there was periods after All-Ireland finals experiences for generations before this that were long gaps. Not this group. This is a fifth All-Ireland final since 2012. That's incredible.
Yeah, we're completely spoiled. We're absolutely spoiled. If you look at even Croke Park experiences, because, I mean, I remember the, you know, it's not that long ago when it used to be commonly said that when Mayo left Connacht and went to Croke Park, their performances went down, that we couldn't handle playing in Croke Park. Whereas Galway could have, you know, bungled their way through Connacht, and they actually got better when they got to Croke Park. And it's not that long ago since that would have been the received wisdom, if you like. Whereas now we are absolutely a Croke Park team. There's no question about that. And are one of the top teams in the country. And that hasn't been the narrative of Mayo, certainly from as long as I've been on this earth, you know, because as I was saying before, we were chatting earlier, Rob, I mean, like, I remember so well, like 1969 to 1981, we didn't win a single Connacht title. You know, all my formative years as I was going through secondary school, there were no big days out. There was none, you know, we talked about soccer and mainly about soccer, actually, and very, very little about Mayo, because there was nothing to talk about. And it was only really with the breakthrough, not even 81. 81 was kind of a flash in the pan. 85 was really the first time that there was a statement of intent by a Mayo team at a national level. And really, it kind of all began from there. But even then, it was hit and miss for years. And it's only since 2011 that we've just stepped up several notches and stayed up there, which is the astonishing thing.
Let me give one additional point too, which is, you know, 89 was heroic failure. It was almost like Ireland in Italia 90. It was something to still celebrate. 96 was that painful bouncing ball over the bar and so tough. And 97 was what it was. And we know about 04 and 06 and the humiliation that was involved in those defeats and the utter sense of we're miles off. So what is amazing about this period is there's a single clear narrative of a pursuit of excellence and a resilience like no other sporting team I know, and we can only speak from our own perspective, but I've never seen anything like this sporting story. It's the greatest sporting story I've ever seen or ever read, this Mayo story.
And the thing is as well, Rob, is that it's not one of unending misery either, which is what, you know, a lot of people characterize it as for us and sympathize with us for all the wrong reasons, because I think we, you know, and you'll hear it. I was listening back to Killian's interview, and I thought it was really interesting what he said about those defeats. In that, you know, sure, he looked at them again, and then he packed them away and he moved on. And he said, "They only really hurt if you keep them inside you." You know, and it's clear that he hasn't. And I don't think supporters have either. You know, I think, you know, can I remember the pain of losing to Donegal? Well, not really. Can I remember losing, you know, to Dublin the year after? Yeah, a little bit better, but still, you know, I don't have too many scars for it. I probably do from 16 and 17, but, you know, they are closer. Jesus, they were only a few years ago. And, you know, I barely recall 89 at this stage. So I do remember is the great days out and the fact that Mayo are finally on the national stage, finally shooting for Sam. So, you know, I just think long may these days continue, because I tell you, the day we stop getting into finals is the day that I would be worried.
I started this podcast in 2009, A, because I just love the concept of podcast, but B, because I just wanted a conversation about Mayo football. I wanted something to help me make sense of the chaos of like 2006, the greatest sporting event I've ever seen was beating Dublin in that semi-final. And then the final, my God, it was the exact opposite. And I just said, enough already. Like, you know, for me personally, I really struggled not to be thinking football during the summer. And at times it was just overwhelming. So you just said, well, the best thing we could have out here is, you know, people on to just talk about it and just put some common sense or put some kind of analysis on top of the chaos. And I think that's something that I'm kind of most proud of with the podcast over the last few years, John. It's nothing that you or I have done, if we're being honest. It's the Sean Rices, it's Kevin McStays, it's of course our regulars. It's Edwin McGrail, Gerard Flanagan, Billy Joe Padden, it's Mike Finnerty, it's all the lads who put their time and effort and thought into following this team. And then it's our regular guests. It's Mick Foley, mm-hmm. It's Colm Keith. All these people help us frame a narrative, and I hope over the next couple of weeks, the rest of the nation will pay attention to the fact that Mayo people are very much at peace and at ease with all of this, and they enjoy it and they live through it, and they're way past the ups and downs of the past.
Yeah, for sure. And I would put a higher level in terms of, if you're including a dramatis personae, you have to put the team, you have to put the players and the managers and all the rest who have been there through that period, because I've always been very clear about the blog. Like, people don't come to the blog, you know, for my silken skills as a writer or any nonsense like that. All I have to do is look at the traffic. You know, when we were playing, when the team were not playing well, you know, not a whole pile of people came. There was an inflection point in 2011. It was all about what was happening on the pitch, and then that's the way it is, you know. And I just think we have so much to thank all of the players who have been involved since then, in terms of the great days out and the enjoyment they've given us.
Yeah, it'd be like having a podcast about a waterfall if the water dried up. You couldn't really have a podcast about a waterfall. We're just talking about something that's happening. That's all we're doing. We're not contributing to it in any way. Having said that, what was great during back early summer, I was saying this actually way back in May to be precise, was the chance for Billy Joe and Killian O'Connor to get together. It was around the time the Mayo News did a brilliant series on the top 100 club footballers, and Killian O'Connor came out tops. He was very, very proud from a Ballintubber perspective as well, just be acknowledged for his play on the club team. And it was just great, John, as we lead into this segment from it, and recommend our listeners to go and get the whole thing again if you didn't catch it the first time. It was great to just hear Killian in a relaxed setting, because so often we're trying to catch him after games, we're trying to catch him in All-Ireland final previews, and he's got a hell of a lot more to think about than speaking to the masses. But this was Killian O'Connor just thinking through some of Billy Joe's questions and some fascinating answers.
Yeah, and I would thoroughly recommend everyone to go and listen to the whole thing again, because he's such an impressive individual. And like, well, we obviously met him, Rob. We had him on the podcast. We had a good chat with him during the Club Stars, if you remember, back in January. He's such a focused, switched on guy. Jesus, I wish I had my head screwed on when I was 28 the way he is. You know, he's a seriously impressive man. So he is, you know. And what I thought was instructive, just listening back, there are hints now from listening to what he said to Billy Joe in terms of the performances since. Clearly he felt he was coming out the right side of a long period of injuries. And I just thought it was amazing that he considers himself lucky in the injury sense. And we know that he's been anything but unlucky or but lucky. But he had said, because he had never got a bad muscle strain or anything. But you could see that he was in a good place then. And we are now, for the first time in several years, seeing what a fully fit Killian O'Connor is capable of. And my God, he is capable of something else. I mean, the records that tumbled there on Sunday were just off this world. 4-9, obviously the biggest individual score ever, ever, ever in a football championship game. Like, that's just off the, not just in any championship game, not in an Ireland semi-final, this ever scored. He has now scored more goals in the championship than Mikey Sheehy. Sheehy had 29. He's gone over that. And also his average per game has just gone ahead of the great Matt Connors. And Matt Connor is one of the best footballers I have ever seen. Like, that guy was just phenomenal. And I mean, Killian, like, obviously he's taking Gooch's record as the leading scorer. The rate he's scoring at now, he's just disappearing so far over the horizon. I don't ever see, you know, I don't think you or I are ever going to live to see uh, that's the record that he's still putting up, being beaten. So yeah, what a phenomenal player.
It's mad. I like it when you stop and think greatest ever, that's very hard to even make sense of. Mm-hmm. But when you stop and consider the numbers around Killian O'Connor, you just go, wow. It's going to be great to listen to this. Here's a clip from Billy Joe Patton talking to Killian O'Connor. Get your messages in on WhatsApp. Big thanks to our sponsors. Big thanks to all of you who've been listening over the last few weeks. Spread the word. I did mention earlier, following us on the Twitter is a great way of helping us. But also, there's no better way than sharing the podcast on WhatsApp in your groups with your friends and saying, lads, if you're not listening to this, start listening. Thanks, John. Talk to you soon.
Cheers, Rob.
Here it is. Billy Joe Patton talking to Killian O'Connor.
When I look at players that play in your position and that are successful, they all have a physical edge. They have that physical bravery that they're able to take a bit of punishment. Was that something that was always in your game, or is that something that you've had to adapt because of the nature of the game now?
I think probably something that's maybe adapted as I've gone on. Like, it's a really physical game, and it's you have to be at that really high pitch when it comes to tackling and tracking and getting your hands in and winning your own ball and stuff. And you know, if you're a step too low, you're going to be blown away by somebody hungrier and more aggressive. So you have to try and get that pitch right and, you know, be really, really on all the time. As I said, if you're not, someone will come in and snatch the ball away from you. And obviously that's the trick, really, staying at that level while also staying composed and focused and not going over the top. But it's a really fast game. It happens 100 miles an hour. So, you know, obviously it's hard to sometimes stay at that exact level without going too high or too low.
As you said, the game takes its toll as well. You've had a number of injuries the last couple of years. You know, presently, how do you feel?
I feel good now. Yeah, luckily, touch wood. I think, you know, injuries are probably, they're part of the game for 90% of footballers. You know, they're just something you have to deal with. You can't dwell on. I know it sounds funny, but I consider myself relatively lucky when it comes to injuries. I didn't really have any muscle injuries for the first, 8 years, I'd say. And then I had a hassle with my knee, a little bit of tendonitis at the end of 2014. And between the two knees, that probably was lingering since, really. But I feel good now. I think I'm over that. We're lucky as well. Like, the last 6-8 months, Brendan Butler, Conor Finn have been really good around the team, physios and coaches, and have really helped me get back to full training. So I suppose one silver lining is I can probably catch up on some of the training and some of the condition I missed, you know, coming back so late last year.
You mentioned there that those issues in your knees were lingering a bit. So it's probably been a long time since you've really felt 100% fit.
Yeah, I think... probably is. You know, there's been little periods since then, I suppose, where I've had a good run at it, but I wouldn't say it's been completely, injury free. So it's nice to have this period where you can not worry about, you know, your load or managing this or tweaking that and up and down and missing sessions. You can kind of just have a free run at it and just get as healthy as you can. And at the same time, I think you're trying to make sure everyone's healthy as well. You know, there's obviously other concerns at this time. So it's nice to just take a step back.
Injuries, I suppose, as you develop as a player, even as you get older, I know that it was away from my career, your game has to change a little bit. Do you see anything changing in your game as the years have passed? Like, you've played an awful lot of football in the full forward line, maybe a little bit further out at times the last couple of seasons. Is there going to be even more of an evolution in your game?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, I've played a bit out the field as well. I suppose I played a bit out there with Ballintubber last year as well. When Alan picked up an injury and went to centre forward, I think, for the last few games of the year. And I enjoy it out there as well. So it probably depends on the team, be it club or county, wherever there's a need, you know, wherever there's a gap to be filled or wherever there's a role the manager wants you to do, you know, that's a conversation I'd have then with him. But I'll play wherever. I don't mind. I enjoy both. So I definitely won't be picking and choosing. If I get a slot anywhere, I'll take it. So I enjoy playing inside. So we'll see what happens.
Just on that, I think, you know, the clinical way you play, I would always try and put a person like that as close to goal as possible. You've played with a lot of different forwards in that area of the field, you know, with Mayo. Who do you think you had the best relationship with to kind of work in tandem?
It's hard to say. I think there was a couple of really good games with Andy. We had a good understanding for each other. I know I would have probably played really close to goal, maybe in 13 and 14. And then Andy was moving really well after he came back from a couple of injuries, and played slightly in front of him then for a little while. And we just kind of, maybe we're similar kind of players. He knew what I wanted and I knew what he wanted. So we probably used to subconsciously look for each other when the ball was in your hands, you know. So it was a good understanding there.
You combined very well. I'm terrible with years. You combined very well for a goal against Dublin. I can't remember what year it was. I think you ended up finishing it off close in, and Andy had played it into you. Pretty much the two of you against, I think, maybe five Dublin defenders.
Yeah, I remember that. I think it was 2015. But yeah, Andy was, you know, he's brilliant. Just as an inside forward all his life as well. It was just kind of, he knew what you were thinking before you'd even call for the ball. So it's great that way. But played with Darren Cohn as well all the way up underage, and I used to love playing with him since Ted Webb. So and then Minor as well in a good campaign we had. So he's a class act as well. But there's plenty of other guys there that they know how to play inside, and you don't have to tell them anything.
Just before we move on from the injury stuff, really, just do you think has the way your body's been impacted, has that affected maybe the amount of work you've been able to do in terms of your free taking, or has it affected you, you know, physically in terms of what you can do with your free taking, whether that be kicking off the ground or kicking out of your hands?
It probably has at different periods. Just when I had surgery, you know, you're off the pitch for a while and the physios have to be careful and slow to let you back. So you do miss a few, maybe weeks or months where you can't practice. That's when you have to just, I suppose, rely on visualization and your mental game then, and try and remember what it feels like and do work away from the field when you can't kick. Thankfully, I've been able to practice pretty much uninterrupted the last while, really. So I feel like I've no complaints there at the moment, but yeah, there probably was in the past period where I couldn't do a little bit off the ground, one or two seasons, and that probably didn't help. But it's just, you know, that's part of it, part of playing sport. You're going to pick up bumps and bruises, and you know, people have far greater crosses to bear than a few knee niggles. So I'm not complaining.
Good. I wouldn't expect you to complain. Just maybe the question I don't necessarily like asking, but I think every Mayo player gets asked it. Looking back over, you know, whatever it is for you, 7-8 years, and you haven't been able to win the All Ireland. How do you feel about that period
over the last 7 or 8 years?
Yeah,
I feel like it's been the best time of my life. You know, getting to play for Mayo since I was 18 or 19 with men that I have huge respect for, you know, a great crack with great friends. It's been absolute dream, really. So I've loved it. I think the buzz for me, obviously, we'd like to win a few more games than we have, but the buzz of, you know, pulling together for a common goal or a common purpose is what, you know, what I enjoy. You know, making sacrifices, working together, figuring stuff out, and be it in sport or in work or in whatever you're doing. I think that's the thing I get my kicks out of. So I've enjoyed it immensely, and I hope I can do it for another while.
You sound very positive about that, and rightly so. So you're able to move on and not dwell on those defeats and look ahead at all times.
They're just bumps in the road that you deal with, and you take with you. You take lessons with and move on. You know, they're only permanent setbacks, I think, if you take them forward and you dwell on them. As I said, there's people, you know, when you take a step back, maybe in a period like this even, you see there's far more important things in life than things like that. So you take the good with the bad in terms of sport, and you don't dwell on it. As I said, people with greater crosses to bear than bumpy sore knees or you know, the kick of a ball. Obviously, you'd want to win a few more games than we did, but It's still what I love doing, and the energy around the group, you know, over the last few months and years is it's brilliant.